It's Monday night.
I've been in the game a long time. When a catcher catches the ball and it's strike three, you call the guy out. It's that simple, isn't it?
And if it's Monday, it's the knee jerks.
I'm not going to sit here and rip umpires, but you saw what you saw, clearly saw what you saw. I just saw it for the 10th time. Write it and say something once in a while. Have the nerve to say something.
Detroit Sports Talk with Attitude.
Attitude on three! 1, 2, 3!
Attitude!
Coming up tonight, will Big Al guess whose birthday it is? Who are the jerks of the week? What will Eno rant about now? The answers coming up next. Two guys who know Detroit sports, the voice of reason, Greg Eno and Big Al Beaton.
Time coming, but we're back. It's April 10th, 2016, Sunday afternoon. That means it's time for the Knee Jerks, Detroit Sports Talk with Eno and Big Al. I'm the Big Al of the equation, Al Beaton, longtime Detroit-based podcaster and blogger. Due to life situations, we had to take a few weeks off, but we are back, and that means I'm back with my co-host, Greg Eno, of numerous places on the World Wide Web. Greg, how's things?
Doing just fine, Al. Thank you very much. I am Greg Eno from DetroitTigers.about.com. And as Al said, lots of other places as well. But you can catch my Tiger stuff, especially now with the regular season beginning, having begun at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, at DetroitTigers.about.com. And as Al mentioned last time we were with you, you can subscribe to my page. So whenever there are updates, you can get a fresh email in your inbox. So please do that. Programming notes, April 12th. Before I go to the programming notes, let me do the other promos. Follow us on Twitter at the Knee Jerks. Follow me on Twitter at Greg Eno. Facebook fan page is facebook.com/the Knee Jerks. And the blog is thekneejerks.us. Programming note, 2 weeks from tonight, Al, today, Al, on the 24th of April, Matt Hutter, our Red Wings expert, will be joining us to talk about one of two things, either a postmortem on the season or a continuing playoff run. We're not sure which of those it's going to be, but regardless of which one it's going to be, Matt will be with us on the 24th. We haven't talked to Matt actually since the beginning of the season, so I'm eager to get his take on what's going on. Lots has happened, of course, in the course of the regular season. Al's got some items on his menu that some fresh Red Wings news we'll talk about as well. And obviously everybody knows they're in the playoffs now. We'll talk about that. And also the other programming note is Al, Sunday, May 22nd. Mm-hmm. You know what that is? That's our 7th anniversary show. Believe it or not, it's been 7 years.
Yeah. And otherwise known as Al's editing nightmare.
That's why we always give Al, a week to get his act together, and we don't do a show anywhere near Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. Let Al have his entire 3-day weekend off to recuperate from his editing nightmare. Sunday, May 22nd will be our anniversary show.
Right. I can't believe it's been 7 years either. And actually, it's been longer than that if you factor in how we started doing this. Is just online chats we would post on our respective blogs. So.
You know what I might do, Al? I might post something on our blog and on the Facebook mm-hmm. page that kind of shows where were we in 2009 with Detroit sports, where we are now, because mm-hmm. lots of change. And once you see those side-by-side comparisons, I think it'll be even more stark how much has gone on in 7 years. Yeah. And, of course, we're going to bring back a lot of our former – as we always do, a lot of our former guests will be joining us that day as well, and that's why it's such an editing nightmare for Al. So that's on Sunday, May 22nd. So Sunday, May 22nd. Anniversary show, Sunday, April 24th, Matt Hutter. So, Matt, mark those two dates on your calendar. Before we get into any of what Al's got cooking for this show, let's get to something we like to call Whose Birthday Is It, Maestro?
We baked you a birthday cake. If you get it to me, and you moan and groan and woe, don't forget we told you so.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
Everybody knows how we play this game by now. I give Al a clue or two or three of an individual whose birthday it is today in the world of sports. And if Al can correctly guess that person within the first two clues, this is a good one, Al. You're going to win. Mm-hmm. This is a good one. You're going to win a miniature soccer ball autographed by Drago and Trevor Francis.
The old Detroit Express. Oh, yes.
a good one.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Trevor Francis was a really good player. And Drago, good Lord. And we're not talking about a Bond villain or wasn't he the boxer in Rocky IV, I think. So Ivan Drago, if he dies, he dies. Yes.
What was the name of the team that Drago played for, though? It wasn't the Express. It was something else.
I don't remember. It was it one of the indoor teams?
I think it was indoor, yeah.
Yeah, when he played it to Joe. I could, you know, back when they hit a, I miss those days when we had arena football and indoor soccer and all kinds of weird things going on. So, but no, I don't remember. That's a, maybe I'll be able to have a chance to look it up before the end of the show. But regardless of that, I'm on pins and needles for your question. So fire away.
Well, this person now made his name in football, although you could easily argue that he made more of a name after he was a player, although he was a pretty good player. I was looking at his numbers and they were better than I thought they were, but he clearly for most fans is known for after his playing career. However, he was a one-time NFL MVP, which I didn't know. He's a three-time Pro Bowler, which I didn't know. And he was kind of a gunslinger, and I'll leave it at that.
Jeez. MVP, a few time all pro, and a gunslinger, which pretty much means he's a quarterback. Jeez, and he's well known for what he's done after football.
After his playing career.
After his playing career, right. Yeah. Okay. Jeez, more than likely, it's got to be someone who's probably on TV or radio right now.
You know, I'm looking at I didn't give you the birth date. I didn't give you the birthday or his status. He was born. That'll help. He was born in 1938, but passed away five years ago. So
all right. Okay. That makes a bit of a difference then. Geez. God, born 38, which would put his prime in the 50s. 60s, yeah. I'll just throw this out there. I'll say Frank Gifford.
No, it's not bad. That's not a bad guess, but Giff was never a quarterback. You're right. He was a quarterback. I will give you that, but but Giff is not the – although you're close. That's
okay.
All I'll say.
Same era. Gotcha.
So we'll come back to clue number two after we take a break between item number one and item number two. So, Al, what is item number one?
Well, we got lots to talk about. We're going to start Red Wings because, well, that really has been it's been such a hot topic. Even Sports Talk Radio is talking about hockey lately here in Detroit. But a lot's going on with the Wings making the playoffs. They kept the streak alive 25 consecutive years, but they literally, figuratively, however you want to put it, backed into the playoffs. Let alone there's all kinds of news going swirling around the Wings because as we were recording this, we woke up this morning to find out that Pavel Datsyuk has confirmed the rumors that he plans on leaving, going home and leaving the Wings after this playoff run is over. His career in the NHL will be done. And the further outraging fans is over personnel issues is that Anthony Mantha, their number one pick from a couple years ago, and has shown flashes of being a very good player, was sent down to Grand Rapids this morning as they plan on keeping Joachim Andersen, a guy who they literally placed on waivers and no one in the league wanted a few months ago, will be on the team as a penalty killer. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about what's going on in goal. We'll talk about the honeymoon essentially being over for Jeff Blashill. He's getting roasted by the fan base as of late. And so I'm sure it'll be a very long, convoluted conversation about the Wings. We're going to touch on the Pistons as well because they have made the playoffs for the first time since 2009 with two games left in the season. Stan Van Gundy will talk about some of what he's really pulled off with this team in less than 2 years. Andre Drummond, there's always got to be a little bit of controversy with the Pistons, and this right now is swirling around Andre Drummond and his foul shooting and the possibility that he's sulking over things. And if we have time, we'll at least touch on the start of the Major League Baseball season. The Tigers are off to a pretty good start at 3-1. Really good start at 3-1, playing well, hitting the cover off the ball, getting some solid pitching, but obviously the relief pitching will always give people something to bitch about. We'll touch on that if we have time. But we anticipate having a very long Wings conversation, Greg. So why don't we start with them backing into the playoffs? Yes, they did beat Philadelphia midweek, I believe on Wednesday, to move into playoff position. But they despite having, as they say, holding destiny in their own hands, they did not play very well at all in their final two games against the Bruins and Rangers. They were dominated by the Bruins, and that was in a big game for the Bruins because they were playing for their playoff lives at the same time, and the Wings could have ended their hopes at them, but they were smoked. Then they lost 3-2 to a Rangers team yesterday, Greg, that was resting like their top six players and playing their backup goalie. So the end of the season was a bit of a debacle for the Wings, but it was a bigger debacle for the Bruins, who lost 6-1 to Ottawa, essentially making everything moot. So your playoffs will be, at least at the bottom of the East, the Wings will finish in the seventh spot and the Flyers will finish in the eighth spot. But that also means there will be a rematch of last season's first round playing Tampa, who are missing their best player, Stamkos, and one of their top defensemen is out with a broken leg. This is a team that the Wings took to seven games last year, but I don't think this team is as good as last year, starting with what's going on behind the bench. But right now, I'll just put it this way, Greg, after all we've kind of talked about here with the Wings, and we were heavy on this about a month ago, a lot of these things we were worried about have kind of come to fruition. I don't want to say ambivalent, but I'm not as hyped up for the playoffs as I normally am for the Red Wings because, yes, they made it for a 25th season, but they did it in a completely uninspiring way. In what is really a down East this year with 93 points, which wouldn't even get you into the playoffs most years. This is a team that really I'm getting mixed messages from. Some nights they look like a team that could make a run in the playoffs. Other nights we get efforts like we saw against the Bruins on, Thursday. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to the playoffs. But I guess my feeling about the Wings playoff run this year is hope for the best, but I'm expecting the worst. What's your take on them backing into the playoffs, Greg?
Well, I would agree with you, Al, that this is certainly not – this might be the weakest – it seems like the weakest Red Wings team to make the playoffs in quite some time. Their goal differential was considerably negative.
I think they're negative 12 or something. They do have the worst goal differential in the playoffs of any of the teams.
Right. And they are, I think I also saw a stat that it's the worst goal differential since like the 97 Canadians or something.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Goes back quite some time. Of course, ultimately, none of that matters, you know, when the games start and the series begin and, you know, and all that stuff gets tossed out the window. But, you know, just looking at the team heading into the playoffs, there isn't, you know, I'm with you. There is not a lot. There's not a lot of inspiring stuff going on. They can't score. The goaltending is, you know, you just every time you think you've got your handle on it, it changes. You thought it was Howard, then you thought it was Mrazek. Now it's Howard again. You just don't know what's going on with that. You don't know when those goalies are gonna crap the bed and get pulled. I don't know what happened to Mrazek. We'll get into that. But I agree that I know where you're coming from when you say that, you know, it's just you're hoping for the best, expecting the worst. You know, unlike other Red Wings teams, and I know they haven't gotten past the second round since 2009, but there have been times where you've gone into the playoffs thinking that they did have a shot to win a round and maybe win another round and, you know, not necessarily win the cup, but make things interesting. But this year you get the feeling like they're one of those teams, Al, that is just there to fill out the 16 team tournament and probably will be gone in short order. Now, the one thing they do have it to their advantage, I suppose, is they're playing a banged up Tampa Bay team, which of course does not have Steven Stamkos, does not have Callahan. So they've got some issues as well, but I just don't know that there's enough scoring, Al, to carry them. And the way the goaltending has been, I'm also not seeing, you know, anybody that's going to, you know, stand on their head, as they say in hockey, and steal a series and play out of their minds, because the Red Wings need to not give up more than two or three goals. They give up three goals and it's tough for them to win a game, because that means they got to score four.
Yeah, and who's going to give them goals, you know? But yeah, I was just looking up the standings, and the Wings are at -13 in goal differential. The only other team in the playoffs with a negative goal differential is Philadelphia at -7. Everybody else is well into the black when it comes to that number. So this is a team that struggles to score goals, that really has issues on defense. And some of that was masked earlier this year with the goalie play, and that has changed somewhat as well. But I guess let's start with as to where things stand right now and going into the playoffs. Let's start with, I guess, Jeff Blashill, who I think we were all in agreement when Mike Babcock decided it was time to move on. I think everybody agreed that, yeah, it probably was, who in the proceeded to sign a huge contract with Toronto. And they had his the coach in waiting in Grand Rapids and Jeff Blashill. Everybody was in agreement that, yes, he would be the guy for this team. Well, the honeymoon is over for Blashill, the way things look, because right now he is being shredded for numerous things. The rookie head coach has been roundly criticized for his over-reliance, it really feels like, on Datsyuk, and really a badly fading Henrik Zetterberg. The guy has scored one goal since mid-February. And Cronwall, for that matter, Nicholas Cronwall as well, he's negative 23. He's had the worst season of his career. That those three are playing huge, huge minutes. And we found out today just how badly hurt Datsyuk is, that he's playing on extremely surgically repaired ankles that are still giving him issues. We thought that he would give more of the young players a chance. Then we see stuff like what we found out today, that Anthony Mantha, who really, I think, added a spark to a desperately bad power play, is being sent to Grand Rapids so they can keep Joachim Anderson, who's going to probably just play the penalty kill. So, well, you play him 4 or 5 minutes a game. And this is and Anderson is a guy that they sent down. They sent down earlier this year, put him on waivers, and no one in the NHL picked him up. They seem to – the limiting the playing time, something that has bothered me, between Mantha, Abathanishu has really played well in his playing time, yet he's only seen less than 10 minutes a game. They've totally forgotten that Timo Polkinen exists. There's this feeling, Greg, that Blashill is being out-coached and is in over his head. I mean, the latest gap, and it was a huge one in the last game of the year against the Rangers, is that he pulled Jimmy Howard out of the goal without the Wings having full possession. And immediately the Wings gave up an empty net goal, which ended up being the game winner, because it was 2-1 at the time and ended up 3-2. And so between that, his personnel management, he's turned into Mike Babcock light. When we thought, I said, let's play the kids, let's see more what we've got in Grand Rapids, he seems to be leaning heavily on aging veterans, but at least Babcock seemed to get more out of those veterans than Blashill is. So in some ways, I get this feeling that maybe Blashill is not the same demeanor, but he may end up the same way as Dave Lewis 2.0.
Well, sometimes that's a good analogy, by the way. For folks who don't know or forgot, Dave Lewis, of course, took over after Scotty Bowman retired. And Dave actually had two really good regular seasons, but was blasted out in the first round in 03 and second round in 04. Didn't get along with Brett Hull, had a lot of issues, and he was gone. And then the lockout came, and then they hired Babcock. But it's a good analogy in the sense that, Blashill's following a longtime coach, just like Lewis did. And although Lewis, of course, was, the difference in the analogy is that Lewis was Bowman's assistant coach for years. Actually, he was an assistant coach with the Red Wings for several coaches, Demers and Brian Murray and Bowman. And, that was probably not a good hire by Kenny Holland. That he probably should have gone outside the organization. It's okay to move an assistant in, Al. But when you've been an assistant for some 15 years, like Lewis was, 14, 15 years, and then you're the head coach, it's just different. It's just sometimes you need that a new person. And it wasn't that Dave Lewis wasn't qualified. I mean, it had nothing to do with that, but I don't know that he was, because he ended up being a head coach in Boston. I think it was just a matter of that wasn't the right place for him to be a head coach. He probably should have. That was just a bad hire. And again, he had two very good regular seasons, but they were so talented, it would have been hard not to have good regular seasons with those Red Wings squads. So it was all about what you did in the playoffs, of course, in those days, and he just didn't get it done. So that was the end of that. But so that's where the analogy is fitting, in the sense that, I mean, there is some good to that analogy because of the following a longtime coach, but different because, Blashill was only assistant for Babcock for 1 year. The pulling the goalie thing out, I mean, if you look at that play, first of all, the Red Wings were and that the Jimmy Howard was on the side of the ice furthest away from the bench. So it was going to take him even longer to get to the bench because of where the bench, where he was versus the bench. That was the first thing. Secondly, I looked at when they showed the goal, the empty net goal again on the overhead replay. It took this, by the time the sixth skater even got on the ice, he was, the Rangers had the puck. And I mean, they were coming down the ice. I mean, the sixth skater actually, and I think it was Nyquist, ended up being like a defenseman inside his own blue line by the time that shot went in the empty net. So that whole thing was poorly. It was too early, number one. I thought it was too early to pull him anyway. 2 minutes and 44 seconds, I think it was for a one goal deficit was too soon. Secondly, you didn't have possession, like you said, wasn't deep enough. And the bench was far away from the goal. I mean, you have to take all these things into consideration. If Jimmy Howard was on the other end of the ice, much, much shorter trip to the bench than from where he was, go all the way across center ice to get to the Red Wings bench. It was ill-advised, no question. The Red Wings, Al, you know, the way the situation was going in Boston, of course, you didn't want to take anything for granted, but it looked like they were going to be in the playoffs anyway. But I can see why they would want to play for that point, because you never know what could happen in Boston. And if you got the point, you never know what, you know, then you'd have to get help from Philadelphia, but at least you'd have a shot at it. So I understand the decision to pull the goalie. I just don't understand doing it at that time.
Yeah, is the execution was awful. Let's see
the
very
it was awful. And, you know, when you pull the goalie and an empty net goal is scored 7 seconds later, you've done something wrong. There's no question. Unless a guy shot the puck the length of the ice, if you have given up an empty net goal 7 seconds after you've pulled the goalie, something is wrong. You've done something wrong, clearly. So that was a mistake. You know, I don't. As far as him being outcoached, yeah, I don't know what that even means. I don't know what that means. In hockey, I think it's a little more esoteric in hockey than it is in football or baseball or even basketball in terms of what, you know, what does outcoaching even mean? I don't know. You can talk about line matchups. You know, maybe it's not an in-game outcoaching. Maybe it's an outcoaching in terms of how, you know, certain coaches have their teams prepared and how the Red Wings have their team prepared. I don't know about that. All I know is that they are in the playoffs. But, you know, in Jeff Blash's defense, you know, maybe it was a case of Mike Babcock getting out of town just in time because, this team is kind of – and this is what happens, Al, when you can't make up your mind if you're going to retool or not. When you're kind of in that middle where you're not good enough to contend for the cup and you're not bad enough to tear the whole thing apart, you're kind of in that middle ground, and that's a terrible place to be in any sport when you're not really sure what you're going to do. What are you going to do? Are you going for it or you're not going for it? I don't see this cast of characters doing much in the playoffs. You know, you already chronicled some of the problems with the age and the injuries and the personnel. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be a good mix. It doesn't seem to be a good blend going into the playoffs. Of course, things could change. We know that. But on the surface, it doesn't look like they've got the tools to be even as competitive as they were last year against the Lightning.
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the Babcock stuff, that he saw this coming. He was, he knew that Nyquist and Tatar were not going to be the next Zetterberg and Datsyuk. He saw that his top three players were well on the bad side of 30. And obviously what we're hearing about Datsyuk today is that, Babcock had to know that they were busy. It really sounds like, well, according to the article today, that Datsyuk wanted to leave after last year. So this is, you know, so his top center was a guy who didn't even want to be in the NHL anymore. So and then the young player, this is just one of those things where I think that, I guess the best way that it comes to put out coaching with Blashill is that Well, obviously, there's the occasional gaffes, like we saw with the empty net thing. But I think a lot of it falls with the power play has become pretty much null and void with this team. They have an awful power play. There just seems to be very few adjustments being made with this team that could change up what – essentially, it feels like Blashill keeps doing the same thing over and over – and it's not really working, and he's not making any sort of an adjustments to it. And then we see moves like sending down Mantha, who's been really good on the power play, and you need to score in the playoffs, and scoring's at a premium, yeah. Yet they decide to keep, and I'm sure he had a lot to do with this, because you know he wants this is the roster he wants for the playoffs. He decides to keep Anderson, who essentially is the last guy on the roster who's going to play a couple minutes a game on the penalty kill, and that's about it, because this guy has no offensive game at all. So I think that's the kind of stuff that's really kind of galling me about Blashill. Maybe this is a huge learning experience for him. I think we all underrated that part, that we thought that he could hit the ground running with a pretty solid playoff team. But I think we have seen that a rookie is a rookie no matter, at the top level. And even though he was at the top of his game, in Grand Rapids in the minor leagues, the NHL is a whole different animal with a whole different set of issues and player issues. And maybe Blashill, he'd only spent 1 year in NHL, as you mentioned, 1 year as an NHL assistant.
Right.
So there's been a big learning experience for him, and I would hope that he's going to make some adjustments at the end of this year, whenever that may be, and make some changes as to how this team is put together. I don't want him giving Henrik Zetterberg 20-plus minutes a night. He can't play that anymore. Same thing with Cronwall, who looks like he's been playing on a leg and a half. He's not been the same player since he came back from injury. I mean, and I think with the cap issues this team is having, they may be forced into doing what everybody wants, and that is playing the kids. They have a whole gaggle of defensemen in Grand Rapids. And I think the time is coming, especially with Blashill behind the bench, is that if a lot of these players, it's time to shit or get off the pot with them, because it's getting to the point where they're going to run out of options and they're going to have to let these guys go, like what they did with Landon Ferraro. You can't tell me Landon Ferraro didn't have at least a little bit of value, Leonard, and just having, since they're out of options, they wanted to send him down, and he ended up, in Boston. So I think when you add it all up together, it's a little ugly ball of disappointment when it comes with Jeff Blashill.
Well, you look at the team, and I don't know if I think everybody who works at Joe Louis Arena in their heart of hearts would tell you off the record privately that this is not a Stanley Cup contending team. Yeah, they're happy to be in the playoffs, of course. Anytime you get extra dates at home and extra concessions, and you can jack up the prices everywhere, left and right. That's always a good thing for the bottom line, for sure. And it's always a good thing, I suppose, to be in the playoffs as opposed to not being in the playoffs. But I don't think being in the playoffs, Al, changes this team's situation, which is they're still caught in the middle. And I talked how much did I talk about, I wish Ken Holland would do something bold. I wish he would make a big trade. I wish he would shake it up a little bit. You're talking about the same thing with Blashill as a coach, shake up what he has. And let's wind the clock back, though, and talk about guys who they brought in, Mike Green and Brad Richards. I think both of whom, and let's put the Justin Applicator signing in there as well. All three of those players, I think, in their own ways, were disappointments in various ways, shapes, and forms. I don't think Mike Green brought what I thought he was going to bring to the team. He certainly didn't improve the power play. I heard Chris Chelios in an interview a couple weeks ago. He was asked about Mike Green, and they asked him point blank, "What do you think of Mike Green's year?" And he was very diplomatic and, kind of said, he was, if you read between the lines, basically Chelios was saying it's been disappointing, but he's a good player and we need to get him going, and everybody, and he tried to deflect it and, talk about it's a team thing, but, he certainly didn't heap praise on Mike Green. That's for sure. Brad Richards has been okay. I'm sure he provides veteran leadership in the locker room. I'm sure he's a good dressing room guy. He's chipped in with some goals here and there, but I expected more out of him. And Advocator, who I openly campaigned for last September to get a fat contract by the Red Wings, did get a fat contract by the Red Wings from the Red Wings, and he's underperformed, I think. I think he's been a disappointment. I don't think he's been the force, the power forward, the Brendan Shanahan in making that I thought he was going to be. I thought he took a step back this year in terms of his development. I'm looking at it through a clouded lens because of the contract. But, sometimes these guys, Al, they get their money, and I'm not sure if it's subconscious or what. I don't know that he was as hungry this season as he was before he got the contract. And that's only natural. I mean, you get rewarded with a lot of money, and sometimes that hunger just isn't there. I mean, it's not just him. It happens with a lot of guys. You mentioned Mantha. Remember Al in 2003 when the Pistons brought a young Tayshaun Prince off the bench. And he was like the X factor in the playoffs. He rarely played in the regular season under Rick Carlisle. And all of a sudden in the playoffs, he was getting solid, important minutes. He was an X factor. He was blocking shots. He was making some shots. He was defending. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who's this Tayshaun Prince guy? I mean, he played like 45 games in the regular season. And he would play 10 minutes a game. And here he is in the playoffs. He was a major contributor to the Pistons making it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Well, Mantha could have been he could have been that guy that, if he's going to get some play, and I applaud him getting playing time in Grand Rapids and the experience down there. However, had they given him the opportunity at the NHL level in the playoffs, who knows? I mean, he could have been this unheard of guy that nobody has a lot of, scouting reports on. He could have come in and maybe played 12 minutes a game and 15 minutes a game. And who knows? I mean, he's huge. I mean, you watch him on the ice. He's gargantuan. I mean, he's one of the biggest players I've ever seen. I mean, I know they got, Zdeno Chara and Boston's huge, but Mantha is like a man. I mean, he's like a giant among men. And it's not just his size. I mean, I think he's got some skills. Obviously, they're very raw, but he could have come in, Al, and he could have been an X factor guy. They need anything they can get goal scoring wise. I mean, there's no question about that. You never know. You bring a guy like that in, he pops in a couple of goals and he starts to get some confidence, and all of a sudden, he's like the talk of the town. I don't know if that would have happened or not. We'll never know now because he's not going to get the chance. But that's what I mean, Al. That's what I mean about it. The Red Wings are very play it by the book. They've got there's a definite book that they go by, a manual, if you will, and that's what they adhere to. I mean, that's just they're very conservative. They don't go outside the box. They don't do anything bold. It's not just Kenny Holland. They're very solid. Obviously, they're a very good organization. There's no question about that. However, with stability and with all that, the same faces every year from the top on down, you run the risk of getting yourself into a rut, and you fall in love with players. And I think that's what's happening. And you mentioned Babcock, maybe seeing the writing on the wall. He made no bones about it. He says last year after the season was over with, when he did like his exit interview with the media, he said, "Look, I don't know who the next Datsyuk is. I don't know." He wasn't shy about sharing his feelings about the direction of the organization. So, he figured, well, maybe I'll take a step back in my coaching career with the Leafs to take two steps forward. And let's face it, if he brings the Stanley Cup to Toronto, he'll be elected, Prime Minister of Canada. I mean, come on, let's face it. So there's a chance that this was brewing for a while. You mentioned Datsyuk. And I just think, Al, that this is just an organization that just doesn't really know really what it wants to do. It's afraid to pull the trigger on a big trade. It's afraid of Branch Rickey always used to say, trade a player a year too early instead of a year too late. And the Red Wings, I think, are falling into that trap of they're going to end up trading guys a year too late.
Yeah, I totally agree there. That's the best way to put it. You're really right about that. Maybe in some ways, you were talking, this team needs to be shaken up somehow, some way. Even though it's a playoff team, it was a borderline playoff team at best that kind of lucked into getting in. And maybe the loss of Datsyuk, because there's going to be a $7.5 million cap hit that can't be written off in any way. You can't buy it out. You can't just because he's retiring at his own volition doesn't mean it's wiped off the books. You're stuck on it because this is an animal Kenny Holland created himself thanks to the deals that he gave to, I believe, Johan Franzen and Henrik Zetterberg. No, really long deals that at the end, the last few years at the end, have very minuscule base salaries, heavily front loading them. So with the new CBA, if you sign a long term contract after the age of 35, that cap hit remains no matter what it is. So, those contracts were essentially legislated out of existence. So the Wings got this huge cap hit that they might be able to trade off. I mean, Philadelphia was able to pull it off with what was that big defenseman? Pronger, Chris Pronger. Because there are some teams that need to reach the cap floor, so to speak. But that limits your who you can deal with, and let alone the Wings are going to have to sweeten the pot anyway, probably throw in a prospect to get a team to do it for them. And if the Wings find themselves stuck with this cap hit, maybe this will force things, Greg, to that they'll have to start. I'll say it's time. Maybe it's time for the rebuild, or it's time to see what all these guys you've been stockpiling at Grand Rapids can do, because we can't afford to get a Steven Stamkos or whoever's going to be available in free agency. So maybe in a way this will help trigger a rebuild or trigger changes in this organization, because they're going to be essentially going into the next season with one hand tied behind their back salary-wise if they can't do anything about this cap hit. But if that forces them to see what they have in guys like Ouellette down in Grand Rapids, well, maybe in the end it'll work out for the best. But we don't know the factors playing into this. You know, is there pressure from the Illiches to keep this team making the playoffs, specifically especially when they're going into a brand new arena in a couple years? You know, they don't want to enter a arena with a crappy team. At least that's the best case anyway. So, you know, and I guess the other question is Ken Holland even capable of being able to do the things this team needs? Because over the last few years, pretty much every move he's made, I won't say turned to crap, but he sure hasn't been a standout general manager. Like, you brought up the Green and the Richards signings, which really turned out to be blah at best. I mean, there's some contracts on this team that are really handcuffing them, like the Erickson contract, which is awful. And yet they're forced to play him because they're paying him $4 million a year. Let alone they need to put Johan Franzen on long-term injured reserve. I got the feeling with him is that the Wings were hoping against hope that they would have him on the ice this year. It really felt like the Lions and Javid Best. Oh, he'll get better. He'll get better. We'll finally get him back. Well, he's not coming back. And you get that guy on long-term injured reserve so you can write that contract off. There's a lot of things this team needs to do, and I just don't know if Ken Holland, at least anymore, is that guy. Because I know you've brought up, you've brought up bringing some fresh meat into the front office. Because right now, the front office is what I think really feels stale about this team.
You know, Al, it's fine and dandy to, you know, walk into your workplace year after year after year, see the same faces. It's comfortable. It's warm. It's friendly. It's like an old shoe, you know, and that's fine and dandy. But in the world of professional sports, sometimes sometimes comfortable and warm and fuzzy and feeling like an old shoe isn't really what you want, you know, and there's a couple of things going on, a couple of dynamics here too, Al. I think one of them is that the Red Wings have won 4 Stanley Cups under Mike Ilitch's watch. Doesn't mean that he doesn't want to win any more of them. However, again, just like the Ablicator thing, the hunger, when you've won your 4 cups and you've got a baseball team, you're a multiple sports owner, you've got a hockey team that's won its Stanley Cups and had its, you know, has had all that great times, and then you've got a baseball team that's still trying to find its first world championship in 32 years, you know, obviously we've seen urgency on the Tiger side of the ledger, you know, the firing of Dave Dombrowski, which we never thought, I don't think we ever really thought we'd really see. We saw that happen. the spending of the money in the offseason, Justin Upton and Jordan Zimmerman and on and on, all the moves that Al Avila has made have had a sense of urgency about them. And because the owner's age versus the fact the Tigers have gone, you know, a 32-year drought between championships. So it stands to reason that there's more urgency on the Tiger side of things than there is on the Red Wings side. The Red Wings are like the big brother that you can always count on, and the Tigers are the younger brother that you're trying to get up, help get them on their feet. And frankly, Al, the other dynamic is that Ken Holland, let's face it, Kenny Holland, who I love, I mean, I love Kenny Holland, but he's never had, Al, if you think about the time, he became general manager in 1997 after they won their first cup. They have not the first cup, but the first of the four. He has not had to do anything like this before. He's never had to rebuild a team. He's never had to retool, really even retool a team. He's always had, and this is, you know, he gets some credit for this too, of course, but he and his scouts have been able to put together, and Mike Ilitch's checkbook, those things combined have been able to cobble together, you know, these superstar laced rosters with very good potential for Stanley Cups, and they've won Stanley Cups, and this has been a constant, and they have brought in good coaches, and they've had all-star Hall of Fame coaches and all this other jazz. But now, you know, it took a long time. Granted, it did take a long time, but here we are 19 years later after he became general manager. And now he's doesn't have, it's a different dynamic. It's a different team. It's a different need. The way of doing business, the old way of doing business, Al, isn't good enough. And let's face it. You know, I think it's just a matter. I don't think there's anything really going on here, other than they're just not good enough, and they just don't they just don't have enough good players to really do anything beyond make the playoffs. You know, win some. You know, be over 500, get 95 points or whatever, and we'll see you next fall after we get drummed down the first round. That's really all they are right now. And I you know, just too much comfort, too much falling in love with players. And I like this. I love coming into work and seeing Nick Cronwall in the weight room. I love coming in and seeing this person over here and that person over there. I love it because we've been doing it for the last 15 years. Okay, but this is professional sports, and this isn't working at GM or Ford or Chrysler where you put in your 20 years, get a gold watch, and go home. You've got to continuously change. I mentioned Harry Sinden last time we spoke. Harry Sinden won as a general manager with many different teams, many different coaches, many different players over a course of 30 years. And Kenny Holland now is faced with this. He's kind of finally come to a crossroads, Al, in his career as a general manager. It took a long time to get there, but he's finally reached a crossroads, and the Red Wings now have to decide, are we going to do something a little bit out of our comfort zone, or are we going to continue to be conservative, loyal, close to the vest, comfortable, old shoe, you know, what are we going to, and that's not, I think if they take that latter tack, you're going to see teams that are right in that middle. And that's, like I said, it's a terrible place to be in any professional sport. You'd rather be bad than in the middle, because the middle, at least if you're bad, you're going to get some high draft picks. There's urgency. Coaches get fired. Things happen. When you're in the middle with an organization where everybody knows each other's kids, everybody's seeing each other grow up, everybody's seeing each other's kids get married, I think sometimes that works against you, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a very good point that there is something to be said about making people uncomfortable that can lead to maybe taking a little more risk, I guess is the best way to put it. Because, as you said, this team has not made really any kind of seriously risky, high-risk, high-reward move in – it's been a long, long, long time. Well, it's been a long time since they've really been to the point where they had to. And, yeah, I think you make when you say they're at a crossroads, I think you're – it's a good point. They need to make a decision, especially now with the odds are – I mean, there's a headline in Detroit News right now saying that's what might come back. You know, this is his agent, of course, saying this. But come on, he really sounds like a guy who is gone, no matter, you know. And you really want a Pavel Datsyuk whose heart really isn't fully in Detroit anymore. Right. That doesn't make sense to keep him that way. And I think both parties end up seeing that. But with the loss of Datsyuk, I really do think that there's no really replacement. You know, not that you can replace one of the best players of all, you know, in team history, but there's no one to really that you could seriously plug in and expect even remotely similar production. I mean, all of a sudden you're going to actually ask that, okay, now 20-year-old Dylan Larkin. Okay, you now have to be Steve Yzerman and put this team on your back for the next 15 years.
Right.
Because that's essentially what is going to end up happening because, as we said, Zetterberg is just a shadow of what he used to be. The man, he's a shell. I mean, he doesn't score anymore. He's essentially become a point guard. He's a passer. That's all he really does. And then after that, this team is – the roster really does seem like a mishmash that, you know, there's old players that they really don't have replacements for yet. There's young players that aren't really proven yet. And then there are some guys in between who they thought would be the next generation – that are all, I think, are looking more and more like they could be trade bait. But even specifically Tatar and Nyquist. And the problem with them is you could end up trading them low because they both had very off offensive seasons. And you could make a good case that one of the reasons why the Wings' goal differential is so awful is because Nyquist and Tatar, you know, they're each player's goal production was down around 10 goals. Each for whatever reason, you know, it's like it's for some reason it hasn't clicked with them. So, you know, and that's what's going to end up taking Greg. You know, if they're going to do something risky, if they're going to try and shake things up, it's going to have to be with some of those players that, as you put it, they fell in love with, and because they're still young, they're still under they'll still be under team control for a while. They won't be free agents for some time yet, and it's going to have to be a deal with a Tatar or a Nyquist or a Mantha, or, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm not a GM, and I don't know exactly what's going to be available out there for this team after the season. But you can't, as we've all found in every league, you don't build through free agency. You plug holes. You develop depth. You get stop gaps in free agency, unless you get really, really lucky. But then, again, you also have to really, really overpay to get a superstar, say, like a Stamkos. And I really don't know if the Wings are going to have the cap room to even think about making a run at a guy like Stamkos, who would help solve their offensive issues with putting the puck in the net, because this team has a hell of a time putting the puck in the net. So, you know, I feel like I'm kind of rambling a little bit with this, but that's what Colin has me feeling right now. I'm not feeling very confident in what he's going to be able to do what this team needs to do. When it comes to fixing, what's wrong?
Yeah, then that's a good way of putting it. Exactly. You don't have that feeling, you know, at least with guys like Jack McCloskey in the past, and even Dave Dombrowski to an extent. And you could even talk about, you know, you say what you will about some of the Red Wings' decisions back in the day when they weren't very good, or when Jimmy Devolano was the general manager, or even when Scotty Bowman was the general manager, Brian Murray. You know, some of those moves didn't pan out, but those guys weren't afraid to make a trade. You know, you can laugh all you want at this Tim Cheveldae for Bob Asenza trade, and you can laugh all you want about Adam Oates for Bernie Federico. I get it. But, you know, sometimes at least those guys would trade a guy. You know, Jack McCloskey was never afraid, as you know, Al, to trade somebody who you thought he would never trade, number one, or he wasn't afraid to give a guy 1 year, you know, a la Dan Rownfield, for example. Mm-hmm. And say, well, he's not the answer. I'll, you know, get rid of him and bring in somebody, you know, bring in Ricky Mahorn, who was the answer. I mean, that's the thing that you've got to do. You constantly got to be massaging. And the Red Wings, you mentioned free agency. You know, they were able to build to a degree with free agency because they had so much money and there was no salary cap. So you could go out and sign Luke Robitaille and Brett Hall and make a trade for Dominic Hasek and bring all these superstar guys in because there was it was a bottomless pit of money. But that's not what you're saying is under the framework of the current salary cap in the NHL, you're right. You don't necessarily build a team that way. You can, unless you can, you know, find a really big piece maybe and build around it, but you're right. It's usually complementary pieces. You know, I wish the Red Wings would have found some way, Al, in 2009 to keep Marian Hossa here.
Yeah.
I mean, they brought him in for 1 year. He scored his requisite 40 goals like he always does. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately led him to the Stanley Cup Finals and almost won it. And then he was gone after 1 year.
Well, that turned into one of those coin flip things. They had to make a choice, Franzen or Hossa. They went with the slightly younger Franzen.
You know, look at the Franzen money, look at the Franzen contract, and all the concussions, and how this team, if this team had Marian Hossa, my goodness, you know, I mean, not even now, but I mean, in the years between 2009 and now, if they were able to keep Hossa here for a long term, and he would have been the sniper that you could build the rest of the offense. Right now, they've got a bunch of complementary role supporting players. Mm-hmm. That's what they've got right now. They don't have
a bunch of third and fourth line guys, realistically.
You've got a bunch of complementary pieces that would maybe be good complements on really good Stanley Cup teams that would play, you know, reduced roles with those complementary pieces. Here, they're asked to play a lot of minutes, and they're just not very good. I mean, when I say not very good, they're not good enough to be, you know, game changers. You know, you mentioned Zetterberg being a shell. I agree. Datsyuk, even to agree, has been a shell of himself. And that's with, you know, with good reason, because of his physical condition. And Cronwall, you mentioned, you know, that's well documented. And, you know, these are guys that, again, well, I, you know, go back to the Branch Rickey thing when you were talking about Tatar and Nyquist and others who, if they do trade them, which I'm still not convinced that they will. If they do trade them, you're going to get, like you said, you're going to be trading them, like Branch Rickey said, 1 year later, 1 year too late, as opposed to 1 year too early. And, you know, again, go back in history and all the general managers of all the Detroit sports teams, you can laugh at some of them if you want. But I'm telling you that sometimes what you need is to pick up the paper one day and read Kelly Chabuka for Adrian Dantley. What? I mean, a trade like that, and like another one of Jeff McCloskey's things. It's like McCloskey said, "Look, we're making the playoffs. Okay, fine. Chabuka doesn't play the kind of defense we need to have played to win in this league, you know. Maybe neither does Dantley, but Dantley's a better scorer. He's a low post guy. Kelly was never a low post guy. He was a wing guy. And McCloskey said, "Look, we need the brilliance of Jack McCloskey and Chuck Daly-Al." Was that they were able to identify, now granted, we're talking a much smaller roster, NBA roster is 12 players, but they were able to identify their needs and address them. And that's, you know, a lot of teams can do one or the other. You know, you address needs that maybe you do them poor, you address them poorly, or you fail to identify your needs, one of the two.
Yeah.
These guys were able to do both. They saw a need, they addressed it. I mentioned Brownfield. Brownfield came in here. Spent one uninspired season here. He played in the playoffs and came out in the second half in the street clothes, and that was enough for that. Now, McCloskey saw enough of that, got rid of him, brought in Mahorn, Trebucha, brought in Dantley, got rid of Dantley, brought in Aguirre. He wasn't afraid to just, hey, look, I'm here to win championships. I'm not here to make friends. I'm not here to be loyal to a fault. I'm not here to be comfortable. But he was smart enough to keep the players around that needed to be kept around. Isaiah. Joe, and then those were the guys that stayed, but all the pieces, Al, around those four changed all the time. James Edwards, Dantley, I mean, Aguirre, you know, you name it. Those faces and names constantly changed. The four horsemen were always there. Yep. They were there from the mid-80s on. But the other players, McCloskey shuffled in them out, and you can say all you want about – you know, roster turnover, but he had a good coach. Yeah, the four guys were solid. They policed themselves in the locker room, and you won two championships, and only almost won a third. Yeah. So that's the way you do it, and you don't get the feeling, Al, that Ken Holland and this Reddit organization has the wherewithal to do that.
Yeah, well, yeah, and what you're bringing up the Pistons, I'll bring up the bullion of the 80s Tigers. Remember the Steve Kemp for Chet Lemon trade? And Steve Kemp was a really good all-star level player. Or going back to, remember the fan favorite, John Walkenfuss and Glenn Wilson, who was a solid young outfielder, was traded for Willie Hernandez, who ended up winning the Cy Young, and the first baseman, you know what I'm talking about, Dave Bergman, who ended up being a core bench piece for like a decade. Sure. I mean, those were risky trades. There was no guarantees they were going to work out, but as you said, the general manager at that point, it would have been Jim Campbell, and then Bill LaJoie in the 84, you know, as for that last one. They saw a weakness. They saw a need that needed to be filled. And a lot of times the only way you can do that is you have to make a strength, your strength for their strength, essentially. You might weaken yourself in another way. But, you know, if you think – I mean, you're right. I'll take an elite quality center fielder who can hit over an elite quality left fielder who can hit.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's what the Tigers did. You know, and they ended up with a center field, an elite center fielder for a decade. You know, so that's the sort of thing where the Wings going to have to, they're going to have to bite the bullet and say, you know, we think some talented players here, and there's going to be a market for a Nyquist. The talent is there where, you know, he can be a 20 goal scorer. There's going to be a market for a 20 goal scorer. But they have issues that on defense and in a different areas of that team where they're going to have to trade from strength, and that's part of it. And that kind of leads me into Greg Goley, because you have Jimmy Howard making really good money, over $4 million a year, and we thought Peter Mrazek was going to be the number one goalie of the future. Mrazek has fallen off a cliff, Greg. I mean, literally fallen off a cliff stat-wise. He, you know, in his first 39 games, Mrazek was 22-10-5 with a .930 save percentage. And he's since then, he's 5-6-1, an .893 save percentage, and he was pulled five times in those games. Howard has played decently. I wouldn't say he's been great, but he's been good down the stretch. And when you do have to admit that the defense has become somewhat turnover prone in front of him, and I have a hard time blaming Howard for some of the goals that he has given up during this, especially in those last two games. So he looks like the number one goalie going into postseason. But again, here's a position of strength for this team. You have two, I think, fairly well thought of goaltenders. You have Howard, who is a veteran, who I think could play for pretty much any team in the league and be a starter for a good many of them. And then you have Mrazek, who is still thought of as the goalie of the future and has Vezina-quality talent. I think you have to make a deal at the end of this. I mean, it's a luxury having two talented goaltenders. They're just lucky Mrazek is still on his first contract, because they wouldn't be able to afford him in a few years. This is one of those things where they have to make a decision and then trade one of those goalies and get something they can use out of it. Because I don't think you can carry two of them. Those two, especially at the cap hit that Howard is bringing you right now, I don't think you can do it.
Well, and obviously, if you are going to trade one of those two guys, you would trade Mrazek, obviously, you know, because of the age factor and the contract and all that other stuff. He's much more attractive as a trade piece than
you get a lot more for Mrazek. You're right.
Right. And that, but then we're back to, you know, now we got, then you, but then you're left with a 31, 32 year old goalie who you don't know, you know, which way he's going to go. Cause Jimmy Howard has been Jekyll and Hyde over the last two or three years, whether because he's been hurt or because he just has gone into slumps. I mean, you don't really know. Yeah. I don't think he's ever, Al, I don't think Jimmy Howard has ever really ingratiated himself in Detroit. Cause I don't think he's ever really been that guy that you think you can hang your hat on.
Well, he's never had that playoff run like Osgood did. As much as people write on Osgood, Osgood did take this team to some long playoff runs.
Oh, there's no question about that. I mean, Chris Osgood was a money goaltender. I mean, there's no question. I mean, you can say all you want about, well, he played behind really good teams and really good defense, and I get that. But there were a lot of games where he played very well and led the team to victory. So you're right. But, you know, again, you've got a situation where, you know, do something. I want to pick up the paper. I want to pick up the paper one day. And I say paper, of course, figuratively anymore. Nobody picks up a paper anymore. But figuratively speaking, I want to open the internet one day and see a six-player trade. I want to see three going, three coming. And I just don't think that's going to happen. Like I've written before and I've said on this program, this is not unique to Kenny Holland. I don't want to pick on him because he's not the only general manager in the NHL who doesn't make blockbuster trades anymore. The art of the blockbuster trade, Al, is gone. I mean, you and I grew up in the 70s, 60s even, when, you know, going all the way back to, Ullman and the Ullman and Frank Mahala's trade was huge. 67, 68, whenever that was. Unger and all those guys, Stemkowski, all those, I mean, big names changing jerseys left and right. You know, Esposito and Brad Park and Mertel and Vadney. I mean, you know, Gretzky was traded, and I mean, the days of the blockbuster trade are gone. I mean, they're just gone. I can't even remember the last time I even read about a multiplayer trade in the NHL where guys were name guys, big name guys, high profile guys. And I frankly, Al, you think that you would even see more of that in the salary cap era, because sometimes it's all about salaries and, you know, trading a salary as opposed to trading a guy. And you think that you'd see more of that, but you know, you don't. And, I just wonder if it's ever going to come back and be that way again.
Too many people are risk averse. I think that's the issue. It falls into the comfort thing that if a trade like that blows up, you may have blown up your job along with it. But if that trade is successful, you know, you could pretty much write your own ticket. I mean, as you said with Jack McCloskey, who was a master at that kind of deal. So, right. You know, I think this conversation just all is falling into comfort. This team just is too comfortable in being a middle of the pack, borderline playoff team. We'll make the playoffs at that 6-8 seed. If we win a round, great, but we'll keep the streak alive and we'll do enough. We'll keep saying that we're going to reload, not rebuild. We're gonna change things on the fly. That's an awfully, awfully hard thing to do. And more often than not, it doesn't work. To the point where you can be completely, you know, you that you're next. You're gonna have a Stanley Cup team, which this team was. We're talking almost 8 years ago, and then become a Stanley Cup team again without hitting rock bottom, missing the playoff, or making a huge shakeup. And I think we're in agreement. Things are too comfortable with Red Wings right now. You know, you got a GM that looks like he acts like he's GM for life, which shouldn't be true, you know, but then again, we never thought that Dave Dombrowski would be hired. We kind of thought Dombrowski was in that same role and he was finally canned. But I don't think Ken Holland, one, has quite the cachet because give Dombrowski credit. He made some risky trades. He would empty that damn farm system, but a lot of those trades worked awesomely, you know, specifically Miguel Cabrera, you know, and I haven't seen that kind of willingness to go put yourself out on a limb from Ken Holland. Ken Holland does not put himself out on a limb anytime. And the closest he's done that is letting Babcock walk, but he pretty much had mitigated his risk by signing Blashill to a huge minor league deal to keep him in the organization. So, again, money. You know, it's the money thing that has really helped Kenny Holland. So, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
It's obvious which team has won four championships and which team hasn't.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's why Dave, let's face it, that's why Dave Dombrowski isn't here.
But that all, some dumb luck does play into that, you got to admit. There is some luck involved. The Tigers should have won at least one World Series if Cabrera doesn't tear up his lower body, for example.
No, I'm just saying in terms of, you mentioned all those trades that Dombrowski made and, you know, trading the farm away. And mm-hmm. It was because it was all designed to win now. It was all about winning now. And the Red Wings never really, you know, ever since they won that fourth cup in 2008, there hasn't been that feeling of we're going to remain elite. And once they made that decision, Franzen over Hossa, that was an indicator that maybe, you know, the paradigm had shifted a little bit.
Well, do you think there's just a lack of urgency with the Wings at this point?
There's no question. That's what this whole thing's been about. That's what we've been talking about. There's been a lack of urgency. There has been a lack of you mentioned Holland being the GM for life. There's this feeling of everybody's the royals there. Everybody's the Supreme Court justice. And you mentioned it a little while. You made a good point. You said, look, sometimes you got to make people a little uncomfortable, make them a little bit on edge. You know, and mm-hmm. this is professional sports now. This isn't, you know, a factory. This isn't GM. This isn't Chrysler. This is professional sports now where you've got to, you know, you can't be comfortable. I mean, you mm-hmm. can't – got to be a little bit – not a little bit. Sometimes you got to be a lot of, you know, I can guarantee there was no comfort when Jack McCloskey was the GM of the Pistons. I mean, you never knew. Mm-hmm. Every season brought something else because he was always tweaking the roster. There's always something he wanted to do. Now, granted, some things didn't work. I'll grant you that. Sidney Green didn't work. Kurt Nymphius didn't work. William Bedford didn't work. I get mm-hmm. it. But way more often than not, it did work. And a lot of it was because Jack wasn't afraid. You know, we're talking about a guy that called Jerry West and said, I'll give you my entire roster for Magic Johnson.
Yeah, that's right.
And And that's what he ended up doing. But, you know, yeah. cooler heads prevailed at the Lakers. They said, no, you know, we thank you, but we won't do it. Well, I mean, that was just the beginning. That was when Jack was first there. And then he just became more and more as the years went on. He was just mad scientist. You just didn't know what he was going to cook up every offseason. Every offseason, it seemed, there was somebody coming and going. Somebody mm-hmm. coming and going. And he never was – it never was the four main guys. It was always the guys around them until he found a roster that was good enough to win the whole thing.
Well, let's kind of wrap this hour-long conversation about the Wings up. And where do you think – what do you think is going to happen in the first round? There's no word. We don't know if it's going to start Wednesday or Thursday. But we do know it is going to be Tampa. And this is a team that they have proven to match up with pretty well with in the past. And obviously Tampa is going to be down a couple of players, very good players. So what do you think happens in the first round?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I like the fact that there's no Stamkos, there's no Callahan, and that helps the Red Wings for sure. Makes it, you know, levels the playing field a little bit. But you know, I just look at the broken down players. I look at the lack of scoring. There's just too many holes, Al. There's too many question marks. I just, you know, they would all have to fall the Red Wings' way, every single one of them, to even entertain thoughts of getting past Tampa. I know they're without Stamkos. I know they're without Callahan. I just think there's just not enough. It's not so much that I think Tampa's so good, so much better than the Red Wings, because they're not in terms of points anyway. I just think there's not enough firepower on the Red Wings' side and too many question marks on defense for me to feel comfortable saying that they could win more than one or two games in the series.
Yeah, much as I'd like to disagree, I can't. I don't see this team winning more than a game or two in the first round. Pure and simple, they just don't score enough, and they don't get the kind of goals that you need to get in the playoffs. Those, you know, dirty, greasy, whatever, puck luck type bounces that you need in the playoffs. This team just has trouble getting those kind of goals, and as we've seen in some of these games. This is a team that sometimes has trouble getting out of their own damn end. And I think teams have kind of figured out that this team isn't high-powered offensively, and they're, you know, the right defensive setup can shut them down pretty well, because the big-time creators are getting old, and they just don't have the speed or strength to do what they used to do. So I'm with you here. I see another first-round knockout. I have a feeling our discussion – with Matt in a couple weeks, it's going to be a post-mortem rather than a preview of the next round. Yep. But with that, Greg, I think we need to move on. So let's get the question two of the birthday game, if you could.
Well, as I indicated, this is a person who made his name in football, although not as much as a player, although he was a better player than I thought. Mm-hmm. But it's far more well-known as his post-playing career. He passed away in 2010. He was a quarterback, as we established. He was an MVP in 1966. I did not know that. Three-time Pro Bowler, which I did not know. And I want to tell you that he went to Southern Methodist University, and that might give it away.
Oh, jeez, I should know this. Southern Methodist quarterback, MVP in 1966.
Huh. You were close with Gifford. And yeah. Once you find out who it is, you'll see just how close you were.
Okay. Don Meredith.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Dandy Don.
I had to think about it for a second. Then you kind of threw that last clue in there. And he was actually a pretty damn good quarterback who retired pretty young.
I did not know. He was only 30 when he retired. I did not know that Meredith won the MVP award. Did you in 66?
No, I did not.
I did not know that, but he did. He was a three straight Pro Bowler. As a matter of fact, his last 3 years in the NFL, he made the Pro Bowl each year. You're right. He retired at the age of 30, became obviously a TV broadcaster, worked with Gifford on Monday Night Football, worked with NBC.
The heyday of Monday Night Football when you could not miss a game when they were in their prime.
Oh my gosh, must see TV for sure. Even more so for what went on in the booth sometimes than what went on the field. And so, yeah, Dandy Don passed away in 2010. So you do get
– dead that long, too. It's hard to believe.
Do get the miniature autographed soccer ball autographed by Drago and Trevor Francis. So congratulations.
Oh, I can't wait to have a little soccer match in my apartment here and start breaking things. All right. With that, Greg, let's talk a little Pistons because, well, they've earned their first playoff berth since 2009, almost 7 years to the day, led by Reggie Jackson's 39 points and 9 assists. The Pistons knocked off the Wizards 112-99 on Friday. With two games left in the season, they're in. Looks like right now they stand as a seven seed, but that it's really in flux right now. We won't know for sure if they're going to face the Cavs or Toronto until, well, probably be a couple games yet. Because we'll, of this team, we don't know how they're going to play either. But this is their first postseason since Michael Curry was the coach. It was his only season as the head coach, and their star player was Allen Iverson. And they were swept out in the first round by the Cavaliers in 08-09, and that was essentially the start of the, well, a very dark era of Pistons basketball with multiple head coaches, an ownership change, a GM change, just a huge upheaval in this team. But, you know, this is another one of those things where, you know, people, there are some saying, well, maybe they could use another a high draft pick, get in the lottery. At this, with the way this team is set up, this is the step they have to take. Odds are they're not going to get out in the first round because low seeds just don't do that in the NBA, especially really young teams like this one. But this is a team, I think, their only one really primetime player, Reggie Jackson, has played in the playoffs. And he was just, that was when he was a backup of Oklahoma. So, I mean, they have a whole core of players that have never undergone the pressure that is a playoff series and the attention it draws and just the excitement that it can bring. And if any, you know, and, you know, led by Stan Van Gundy, I'm looking forward to see what this team is, can do. I don't think they're going to do more than maybe win a couple games, if that. But at the very least, I think this is could be the start of what could be another very impressive run for what is really a very young team that it's still probably a piece or two away from being a true contender. But, you know, despite what you can say about their inconsistencies and the issues with youth and, you know, the ups and downs that come with it, Van Gundy's put together a really nice core here of a team that is going to end up finishing over 500 again for the, you know, I think for the first time since like 07, 08. And I just think, I won't say the sky's the limit yet because there's still a lot of question marks, but at the very least, this has the markings of a team that's going to make the playoffs for the next several years if they can keep this core together.
Well, you know, this is an example, and he's been, you know, criticized with some of the moves he's made, but he's an example of a guy who, again, is not afraid to make moves. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, he cut Josh Smith and ate all that salary.
All that salary he decided to eat, but it worked out for the best.
You know, they let Greg Monroe go. They, you know, they did something. They made trades up the wazoo. You look at the roster that Stan inherited 2 years ago, and it's almost unrecognizable now. I mean, just 2 years later, really, it was unrecognizable 1 year later, really, is what it was. And then he just continued to tweak it. He made moves during the season this year. They've not all worked out, granted. But again, you know, Ilyosova, who he traded to get Harris, was a guy who was brought in, you thought was going to be a piece, was going to be around here for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan said, well, you know, we need to make a move.
Yeah.
And here we are now. And, you know, there's some teams out that they make the playoffs in the NBA, and you're right about that. There's not usually a lot of first-round upsets, and you're right about that. But some teams make the playoffs, and it's like, well, I'm not sure if that was really the best thing to make the playoffs.
Right.
You know, why are they here?
As we just talked about with the Red Wings, for example. Yeah,
you know, they're not really contenders. But I think in this case, it was time for them. This was good for them. This was good for the organization. It was good timing.
Mm-hmm.
These guys need playoff experience sooner rather than later. This is Andre Drummond's fourth year. You know, you don't want to get these guys in the league for too long without being in the playoff, giving them a taste of it. You mentioned Reggie Jackson and there are a couple other guys on the roster who Blake and Tolliver who've been there mm-hmm. before, Joel Anthony, Aaron Baines, who've been there before. And so that's good, but you're right. The core players, with the exception of Jackson, have not really been there, done that before. But you've got a coach who's been there, done that. So you definitely don't have a neophyte playoff coach, that's for sure. But it's just nice that they were able to, this soon into this project, get a taste of the experience. And I think, Al, you know, they may win a game or two. I don't think they'll necessarily be swept out either. I think they could. I don't think they're going to be a real easy out. I think they match up okay with Cleveland. If they end up playing Cleveland, they'll probably end up playing Toronto. But, know, I think that they're a team that I don't think they're going to be I don't think they're going to be four and out. I think they'll win a game or two, maybe cause a scare into their first round opponent a little bit. And and I really think this is a good. This is good timing for the organization, as it's for the franchise. It's you know, it's been 7 years, and I, you know, even that playoff appearance was short lived. This is really the first time since you mentioned 08. That's the last time, and you're right. That's the last time they had a winning record. It could be the last time they win a play. You know, last time they won a playoff game also was in 08. So this might be a chance for them to you know, kind of turn the page on all of that. And you're right. I this could be the start of and like Van Gundy said, we hope this is the start of something bigger and better, but you got to start somewhere. And and he's right. That's why I'm glad they made the playoffs. It would have been, you know, if they didn't make the playoffs, you could have still said, well, they're on the right path. But now you can really, with the winning record, and like Van Gundy said, he said, it's gratifying because they made the playoffs in a year where in the East you had to be pretty good. I mean, in the past, you can make the playoffs with a 36-win team, a 37-win team. No. This year, they've got 43. Almost. It could be that every team in the East has a winning record in the playoffs, and that hasn't happened in a long time. So he says, Stan says that's even more gratifying because we didn't sneak in with 36 wins. We have a winning record. I don't know what they're going to do in the playoffs. They'll probably win one or two games, but unlike the Red Wings, one or two games that they're going to win, this is going to not leave a bad taste in people's mouths. I think it's a good taste in the mouths all summer. You can build on it. You can genuinely say you're a playoff team. It's not someone like not team that, you know, made the playoffs on a fluke. I think this is the beginning of, you know, this could be like the Pistons were in 84, 85, right, where started to make it and got their feet wet playoff wise. And it has the same makings of that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you just get the feeling of Van Gundy that he knows exactly what he wants to do. He knows the kind of roster he wants. He's got a plan in place to put that roster in there. Again, it seems kind of feels like the polar opposite of Ken Holland, who just seems to react rather, you know, rather than be proactive, which is Stan Van Gundy has been very proactive with this team.
Or when Ken Holland is proactive, he's proactive on the side of loyalty as opposed to proactive on the side of discomfort.
Yeah, exactly. And it's you know, and this is not a perfect team yet. You know, this, and one of the reasons we don't think they're going to be able to do what they need, you know, be able to move on, is yes, they're very short on the bench right now. I mean, they need a better backup point guard than Steve Blake, for example. The depth isn't quite there yet. You know, this team, that's why the starters play such heavy minutes, but there is a feeling of hope around this team for the first time in a long time, and a feeling that everything is going to continue to go up from here. And I think it all really comes down to, Greg, just feeling good about what Stan Van Gundy can do. Because, you know, you can have issues with his coaching. I mean, hell, Van Gundy's had issues with his coaching himself. You know, he's admitted mistakes he's made with rotation and substitutions and things like that. But he has you know, this is a team that was coming off back-to-back seasons of 29-53. And he's turned that completely around to the point where they are a playoff team and look like they might be a perennial playoff team for the next several years. And with a very young team, and, I mean, think about it. Andre Drummond is only 22 years old. Stanley Johnson's like 19. You know, Reggie Jackson's like the old man at like 25 or 26. So, I mean, this is a guy who has really had, you know, he's done a marvelous, marvelous job of keeping this team together. You know, and being so young, there's going to be a fair amount of ups and downs. I mean, we even saw the ups and downs in the game, in the clinching game against the Wizards, which we'll talk about in a sec. But I mean, I can do nothing but give Stan Van Gundy kudos. This man, it really shows that Tom Gore has made the correct decision in handing over the reins of the entire franchise to Van Gundy.
Well, let's not, you know, the other thing too, Al, is you know, you can bring a new guy in like Stan Van Gundy, and he can come in and he can be a bull in a china shop and make all sorts of trades and make all sorts of moves, and just because you're making a lot of moves doesn't mean you're doing a good job. I mean, you obviously the Pistons were scuffling. They needed an injection of something, and obviously it had to come from outside the organization. Drew Dumars had run his course, and he wasn't getting the job done. So you needed to bring some. I'm all about that, but it wasn't just a case of bringing a guy in, Al, just anybody, mm-hmm. and having him come in and blow the thing up, because there was a method to the madness. You mentioned, Al. You mentioned earlier about how Stan, knows he has a kind of plan. He knows what kind of roster he wants, and that's the benefit, by the way, of being the coach and the general manager, yeah. is that you can't have any internal fighting about that. So, he came in with obviously some sort of plan. It may have from the outside, it looks like, well, there's Stan Van Gundy making another trade again. But it wasn't just trade for the trade's sake. I think all along he's had this master plan. And my only concern about him, I would much rather have this concern though than I would the Kenny Holland concern. My only concern about Stan, and I mentioned it a little earlier this year, is that let's see now if he's got the patience mm-hmm. as a coach, mm-hmm. to talk to his general manager persona and say, I want to do some more tweaking. Sometimes you get into this mode where you can start making changes, and you get kind of power hungry, if you will, or mm-hmm. drunk with power, and you don't know when to stop. Then that's the thing. I mean, you get to a point where sometimes you have to just stop and say, okay, I'm going to see how this group works. Give this group a year or so, see how we do. And then I may go in and address this, address that. And of course, you're always going to have a draft every year to do that. But as far as trades and free agent signings, I'm worried a little bit about, does Stan have the self-restraint mm-hmm. to just kind of give this roster, you mentioned there might be a piece or two away. They may not be.
Yeah.
They may not. They may just be a year or two. I mean, they just need time together. Maybe they do have everything they need. Maybe they just need a couple. Maybe they're four guys like Jack had. Maybe his four guys are Drummond, Jackson, Morris, and Harris.
Yeah.
Maybe those are in Kentavious. Mm-hmm. Maybe those are his five guys, and then he's interchanging guys around those five. I'm okay with that. I just don't want to see. Sometimes you got to know when to stop. Tweaking things and let everything simmer and kind of come together. It's like a soup. You're making a soup. You keep tasting it and you keep adding more stuff to it instead of letting it just cook and simmer, and then you taste it after it's given a bit of time. That's my only concern about Stan, but I'd much rather have that concern than I would the concern with Kenny. I know we keep bringing Kenny, poor Kenny, back into this. But instead of having that concern of being stale, I'd much rather have a guy who's willing to shake things up, because even if it doesn't always work, at least you get the feeling that there isn't going to be things aren't going to get stagnant.
Yeah. And this is the example I have of Van Gundy has a plan. He knows what he has and what he needs to do. His center is Andre Drummond, a monster inside, but he can't shoot free throws to save his life. We'll get into that in a sec. So what does he do this past offseason? He signs a backup center who can shoot free throws very, very well in Aaron Baines, who is proven to be a very quality backup. And as we saw in the game clincher, in the playoff clincher, he was the Wizards were going to Hackadre. He allowed early in the fourth quarter. Drummond missed badly his two shots. They were one was an air ball of all things, and Van Gundy immediately pulled Drummond, put in Baines. And Baines was 10 for 10 from the free throw line in that game. And he's shooting about 80% for the year. So, that's a very smart, coach, front office guy, knowing the weakness of his players and finding a way to mitigate it. In a perfect world, Andre Drummond will at least make 50% of his free throws. Right now, it's only 36%. He's awful from the line. So, at the very least, Van Gundy has come up with a contingency plan for those times when they go to Hackadre. And that's the kind of that I find very impressive.
Drummond is making Shaquille O'Neal and Will Chamberlain look like Calvin Murphy.
No kidding.
Okay. Now the thing about, and that's a very good point. Now you can make a case. Now he won't win it, but you can make a case that Aaron Baines is the sixth man of the year. He's one of the sixth men of the year. He's certainly the sixth man of the year on the Pistons. I can tell you that, because it's not just the free throw shooting. It's just overall. Mm-hmm. His overall play, the defense, the block shots. He's not a guy, Al, who's going to create his own shot. He's not that kind of offensive player. But he know, like Grant Long said the other day, he knows how to get open. He knows how to find mm-hmm. his spot. He knows where to be. He knows how to put himself in a position to get a nice pass from the small guys.
Sound player.
Very fundamentally sound, and was a very, very – that's an under-the-radar. It's a good point. Good job by you to point that out, because that was a very under-the-radar move that Stan Van Gundy made.
Yeah, because a lot of people saying, "Why the hell are you signing him for?" Well, now we know
right.
why.
Right, and he comes from a good pedigree. He comes from the Spurs, and all they do is win all the time. And the other thing too, Alan, this doesn't get a lot of play either. You know, he mentioned the free throw shooting with Drummond.
Right.
Well, they went out and they signed Dave Hopla Dave Hopla, that big shooting consultant. Well, little known thing, and I didn't know this. This was under the radar, but halfway through the year, I guess they took Drummond away from Hopla and they put him with Malik Allen and they had the assistant coach Malik Allen. Malik Allen's been working with Drummond. Now, obviously we haven't seen a lot of improvement, but that's just another example, at least not yet. Mm-hmm. That's an example of Van Gundy or the organization saying, look, Dave Hopla is a wonderful shooting instructor, but for whatever reason, we need to shake that up.
Yeah.
We're going to shake that up even. And we're going to reassign Drummond to Malik Allen and have Malik Allen have a go at it. That's just an example, Al, of and that's not near. That's not an indictment on Dave Hopla, mm-hmm. but that's just an example. It's probably more of an indictment on Drummond, but
yeah.
That's just an example of how you got to be restless. You can never be comfortable. You always got to be thinking, how can we be better? You know, maybe this Hopla thing. Maybe maybe that's not the answer. Let's try Malik Allen, a guy who's played in the NBA. A guy who's played in the NBA recently, maybe he can maybe it's different shooting in an empty gymnasium, mm-hmm. 2,000 jump shots than it is to shoot free throws in an NBA game. Let's address that. Now, obviously, we haven't seen much improvement. I will grant you. And as far as Dre Drummond goes, he can pout all he wants if that's what he's doing. He says he's not, but he can complain all he wants. But Stan Van Gundy, and this is why I give him kudos as well.
Mm-hmm.
Stan's not afraid to. He's not gonna kowtow and worry about hurting people's feelings. He wants to win basketball games, and if it means sitting out a guy like Drummond for the last 9 minutes of the fourth quarter, he said, look, I gave him two tries early in the fourth quarter. He missed them badly, so I had to do what I had to do. I'm trying to clinch a playoff spot. First time in 7 years. I'm not going to throw that away because I'm worried about hurting Andre Drummond's feelings. I just don't think again, these are the things that you have to do. You have to have the guts to do. And Stan's got a history of not being afraid to ruffle people's feathers. It's gotten him in trouble in the past. It's not going to get him into trouble here because he's the boss.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is going to be his biggest project that he still has on his hands. And that is building up Andre Drummond, because, he may, for all intents and purposes, he was saying he was mourning a friend who had died a few months earlier who could not see him make the playoffs. But the body language, at the end of that game, he really looked like he was completely out of it and was pissed off that he was not on the court at the end of the game. And you got to give Van Gundy credit, because he did come over to him and said, kind of pepped him up, said, come on, get in this, join your teammates. But that's still going to be, I think, Van Gundy's – that's going to make or break the Van Gundy era, what he can do with Andre Drummond, because he's going to be up for a big, big contract, probably a max-level contract, yet he's probably the worst free-throw shooter in pro basketball history. Right now, he's still very, very we'll put inconsistent. I mean, some nights he seems to be really into it. Other nights he's just like, what is he doing out there? What is he thinking? He just seems lackadaisical, especially on defense, where, he really needs to be more of a rim defender. You would think someone of his size, his athletic ability, would be far more threatening in front of the rim, when he really doesn't do that all the time. And I think you pretty much, because you got to remember, he's 22, and I think that's what we all forget. He's still a kid, but I think you have to keep him. But I think this is Van Gundy's big. I hate calling Drummond a project, but he really still is a project, because you got to remember, he only spent a year in college, And he's in his first year in the league. He didn't play much, and he's starting to come into his own. But there are still a lot of rough patches with this kid that Van Gundy really needs to smooth out. And I have confidence in him because he's been able to do it. He did it with Shaquille O'Neal and Dwight Howard. He should be able to do it with Andre Drummond. I think Drummond and how things work out with him is going to make or break the Van Gundy era.
Yeah, I agree. Drummond's a wonderful player, but there's still obviously he's still, like you said, he's still a worker. And you mentioned it earlier. Look how young he still is. We forget about that. You know, he's not, you know, we mentioned Chamberlain and some of these other guys. They came in the league older. You know, Drummond came in the league at age 19 or even, maybe he was even 18. I don't know, 18 or 19. And, you know, it just takes a while. And you know, he has improved. There's no question. He's improved his low post moves. He's got a little baby hook now, and he's got, you know, he's not Tim Duncan yet. Okay. Yep. Let's, before we.
And he probably never will be. But.
I know it's a Hall of Famer, but I mean, he does, when I say he's not Tim Duncan, he doesn't have an 8 foot, 10 foot jump shot, which, I don't see why he can't, take a jump shot from the elbow every so often. I mean, sometimes you got to have something else. It's like a pitcher who's got to, you know, adds another pitch to his repertoire. Something else for the hitters to think about. Mm-hmm. You know, something else for the opponents who are game planning for Andre Drummond. No, they don't have to cut. They don't even guard him further than 10 feet away from the basket.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to change if he's going to, you know, especially if he can't shoot free throws. That you got to create other ways for him to score.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's going to be up to Van Gundy to figure those things out. But if there's one guy in the NBA that can do it, it's going to be him. Because right now he's wearing the genius badge right at the moment. That can change from day to day. But right now we're living in Stan Van Gundy's world for what he's done with this Pistons team. It's really, really, really amazing. All right, Greg, ready to wrap things up? So with that, who's your jerk of the week?
My jerk of the week is Major League Baseball for the ridiculous scheduling that I've seen the first week of the season. I don't know why. First of all, I see way too many games played in northern climates this time of the year. You know, the Tigers scheduled to play the Yankees on a Sunday night game, which probably won't be played. But why are you making 30,000 fans bundle up to go to Comerica Park on a Sunday night when they don't even play any regularly scheduled day games or night games until April 21st? I know it's about TV. I know it's about, you know, they could have gotten lucky with the weather. Well, they didn't. I saw the Cubs are opening. The Cubs have their home opener tomorrow night, Monday night at Wrigley. That's blasphemous. I've seen weird stuff all around. The Cubs and the Angels, Al, played an exhibition game on Sunday, the day before they opened the regular season against each other. Why are you playing an exhibition game on a Sunday when you open up the – it'd be like if the Tigers went into Miami and played an exhibition game on Monday and then opened the season on Tuesday. It makes no sense. Some of these scheduling things I've seen in the first week of the season are just make no sense to me whatsoever. Too many games in northern climates. I don't know why we can't start the season in Oakland and in California and Anaheim and Miami and Texas, and I don't know why we can't start the season south of the Mason-Dixon line as much as possible, and then the second week of the season, you know, play games in Minnesota and Detroit and Pittsburgh, and I mean, I don't know, Cleveland and Chicago. I don't know why, you know, the schedule has to always open with these teams in the northern climates playing at home. I don't know why they can't go on the road for the first week, have their home opener the second week of the season, where you have better chance of weather, less chances of rainouts, and less chances of having to reschedule games later. As it is, that the Yankees make their only appearance to Detroit tonight, I believe, is the last game. So now this game is probably going to have to be rescheduled. Now, granted, there's lots of time to do it. I get it. But, you know, why put yourself in that position? I don't know why it was done this way, and I don't know why the Cubs are opening Wrigley Field on Monday night. I don't get that one at all. So my jerk of the week is Major League Baseball for their odd, to say the least, scheduling.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, they send Detroit to Miami to open the season, but for 2 days. I mean, couldn't they have played a four-game series? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You're right. but again, you know, pro sports seem to make weird decisions all the damn time. That make no, especially, and they turn out to be fan unfriendly, like the scheduling issue that I'm with you on. Right, my jerk of the week. Well, let's keep it Tigers. My jerk of the week, but is going to be Tigers fans and some guys in the media over the absolute and utter mind meltdown they had when Francisco Rodriguez had a bad first outing in the opening day, where he gave up, three or four runs, essentially coughed up a win. He blew his first save opportunity, and the Tigers did end up winning the game. Yeah, it was four hits, three runs, and a blown save. But Rodriguez came back the next day and came in a clutch situation and struck out Giancarlo Stanton with the bases loaded to save the game. But after that game, sports talk radio, Greg, became absolutely and utterly unlistenable. You had, all of a sudden the comparison started after one game, and it was, oh my God, it's Joe Nathan again. Oh my God, here it's another roller coaster. Oh Jesus, it's Papa Grande. All these ridiculous, it was like, just because the Tigers have had issues with closers in the past doesn't mean that the same thing is going to happen to K-Rod. And yet, I guess that's why fan is short for fanatic, because it's even worse, if you spend any time on social media during a game like that, which is one of the reasons I don't miss what I used to do with Bless You Boys, because it was freaking ridiculous trying to put up with people who were, who wanted immediately to, cut this guy, send him to Toledo, blah, blah, blah. And if you did that, if you followed fan advice after every game when they say something like that, when someone has an issue, well, you wouldn't have a roster after a week. So my jerk of the week are Tigers fans and some of those guys, specifically in the broadcast media, who fanned the flames of panic because K-Rod had one bad outing. So enough, please. Get a grip. It's a long season.
Yeah. I know where you're coming from, and the only thing I can say in those folks' defense is, they've seen this so many times before, Al. There's so many times it gets old, and your writer was one. The thing that really made me laugh were the folks that said, why don't they have somebody warming up? You don't bring your closer in to get, and then start warming somebody up. I mean, come on now. I mean,
exactly.
And I said, well, who are you going to warm up? Well, because you already used your seventh inning guy. You already used your eighth inning guy.
Yeah.
Who are you going to warm up? The guys who are like your second tier bullpen guys, the guys that you bring in when either in long relief or when there's a blowout, you're going to bring.
You want Drew Verhagen or K-Rod.
Right. I mean, whatever. I mean, it's.
And I got to give at least a little shout out to Brad Ausmus for thinking a little bit out of the box and using Shane Green to close out that game.
We had no choice.
He did use him, and it worked out great. And we'll have plenty of time to bitch about him this year.
There's no question about that. I want to remind everybody that in 2 weeks, April 24th, we'll be talking to Matt Hutter about the Red Wings in one way, shape, or form, whether it's a postmortem, which I probably will be at that point, or still talking about the playoffs. Either way, we'll still get Matt's take on what's going on this season on April 24th. May 22nd is our 7th anniversary show, so be sure to tune in for that. Follow us on Twitter, at The Knee Jerks. Follow me on Twitter, at Greg Eno. The Knee Jerks fan page on Facebook is facebook.com/TheKneeJerks, and our blog, TheKneeJerks.us. And keep an eye on the blog, because I think sometime in the next few weeks I'll post a little post about what the landscape of Detroit sports was in 2009 when we started this program versus what it is now. I think that'll be kind of eye-opening for everybody to kind of – and we'll have a little fun with that. So we'll do that sometime in May as well. I want to thank my lovely wife, Sharon, and thank you, Big Al, for making Sunday afternoon so gosh darn fun.
Indeed, Greg. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk sports with me. Shout-out to my girlfriend, Linda, who will be thrilled that we spent an hour talking Red Wings hockey. And hopefully next time I talk to you, Greg, I'll be nice and tan as I'm leaving for Florida in a few days. Can't wait to get away from this Michigan weather. So with that, let's call it a podcast. So until this time 2 weeks from now, when we welcome Mac Hutter back to the podcast, this is Al Beaton saying good afternoon, good luck, and aloha.
Totally, everybody. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Good night.